Welcome to Groundwire Community Radio News, brought to you by volunteers at Canada's community radio stations.
This episode of Groundwire was produced on Stolo Nation Traditional Territory at Abbotsford, British Columbia at CIVL.
We're your hosts, Glenn Essen and Raina McIver.
In this episode, Canadian mining companies are being brought to court for crimes committed overseas.
The Supreme Court said this is something we will deal with here in BC.
Protests continue against Muskrat Falls.
What I'm fighting for is to prevent Nalcor from poisoning our waters.
And an oil spill near Bella Bella, British Columbia.
I was carrying about 60,000 gallons of diesel on board, which we've been dealing with as it leaks into the ocean.
But first, here are the headlines.
Protests continue at Muskrat Falls in Labrador, with over 80 in attendance on October 19th, despite an injunction being delivered on October 16th. Nalcor is constructing a hydroelectric dam on Muskrat Falls and plans to flood a reservoir without clearing vegetation. On October 17th, 9 people were arrested while blockading workers from entering the Muskrat Falls dam construction site. All of the individuals arrested have been released with conditions. Meanwhile, Nalcor has been bypassing the blockade by transporting workers via helicopter.
Billy Gauthier, an Inuit artist, has been on hunger strike since October 17th to increase pressure on the government and on Nalcor to clear vegetation from the reservoir to mitigate the risk of methyl mercury poisoning.
There's 4 of us, 4 strong warriors that aren't going to give up. There's myself, Jeremy Kohlmeister, Delilah Saunders, and Adam Taylor, and all of us are going to stand and fight right to the end. We're going to win.
And for the people who don't know what's going on, Billy, give them a background.
We're standing outside the gates of the Muskrat Falls dam site. What I'm fighting for is to prevent Nalcor from poisoning our waters. Nalcor is planning on starting the flooding of the reservoir without cutting the trees and removing the organic materials, which Harvard University did a study on, financed by the New Nunatsiavut government. Harvard University said that the methyl mercury levels were way, way higher than the findings of Nalcor, the multi-billion dollar company that did their own studies.
On October 18th, the government of Newfoundland and Labrador ordered Nalcor to clear vegetation from the reservoir, but concerns remain against community members about the extent of vegetation to be removed and whether this will be sufficient to mitigate the risks of methylmercury poisoning. Flooding of the reservoir is set to begin any day.
Our next headline is by Groundwire National Coordinator Braden Alexander.
The government of Ontario has proposed a 2-year moratorium on permits that allow water taking for the purposes of bottling. Earlier in the year, it was revealed that Swiss food and drink company Nestle pays $3.71 per million liters of water extracted from aquifers in Ontario. So far, Nestle has taken 3.6 million liters of water a day from its well in Aberfoyle, Ontario, and 1.1 million liters from another well in Hillsborough, Ontario. Although the permit to extract water expired in July of 2016, Nestle continues to pump water while the permit was under review. Controversy grew after it was announced that Nestle purchased a well in Elora, Ontario. The township of Centre Wellington placed a bid to purchase the well from Nestle, but the company exercised its right of first refusal as owners of the well. Nestle also waived an earlier request to test the pumps and water in order to proceed with the purchase. Public consultation on the proposed moratorium continues until December 1st of this year.
Our final headline is an excerpt from the live interview on Unceded Airwaves, CITR, with Jess Housty of the Heiltsuk Tribal Council to discuss Nathan E. Stewart, a fuel barge that ran aground in the Heiltsuk territory with an estimated 60,000 gallons of diesel spilling into the ocean on October 13th.
Fuel barge owned by a Texas-based company, Kirby Corporation. They regularly transit fuel from Washington up through to Alaska with no Canadian stopovers that I'm aware of. It's a vessel that Heiltsuk and other coastal communities and residents have been flagging as a safety hazard for years, and an under-regulated vessel that unfortunately had a number of exemptions that we believe contributed to this disaster. But around 1 a.m. on Thursday, it's hard to know exactly what happened, but to look at the vessel tracking, you know, they missed a critical turn and went up on a reef. Initially, we were getting reports that the barge was grounded on a rock and that the tug which pushes it, we weren't sure what condition it was in. We've been on scene from the very beginning responding to the incident. Fortunately, the fuel barge itself was empty and not carrying any fuel, but the tug, which took on water and subsequently submerged, was carrying about 60,000 gallons of diesel on board, which we've been dealing with as it leaks into the ocean.
That's it for the headlines. We'll be right back after this.
You just heard Unrest by Douse. And now it's time for our featured stories. Earlier this month, the Supreme Court of British Columbia ruled that a lawsuit by three former Eritrean miners against a BC-based mining corporation, Nevsun Resources, for the use of forced labor conditions could proceed in Canada. This was a precedent-setting case in BC and follows on the heels of a similar case in Ontario, where 11 plaintiffs are suing Ontario-based Hudbay Minerals for repression in their mines in Guatemala. This case sets a national precedent, as it was the first time a Canadian mining company has been brought to court in this country for crimes committed overseas. The following feature takes a closer look at both cases.
The decision by the British Columbia Supreme Court on October 6th to allow a lawsuit against Nevsun Resources Limited to proceed will mark the first time in BC that a case against a mining company for alleged abuses in overseas operations has been allowed to proceed in the province. Alner Govov from The Rational on Vancouver Co-op Radio spoke with Daniel Segay, a Vancouver-based Eritrean activist, about the Nevsun case.
Just recently, the Supreme Court decided to allow the proceeding of a lawsuit against Nevsun Resources, which is a mining company based in Vancouver. They are being sued by three Eritrean men who were former workers on a Nevsun majority-owned site in Eritrea. Their claim is that they worked as slave laborers. The victory recently was that Nevsun tried to claim that this case should not even be addressed or followed through on within BC, that these three men should be suing the Eritrean government. And the Supreme Court said this is something we will deal with here in BC.
Daniel also contextualized the use of slave and forced labor in Nevsun mines in Eritrea as part of the government's forced indefinite military conscription.
Eritrea, a northeastern African country, is a country that relies on slave labor to a great degree. What we have is formally in the books, the state can employ people, young people usually, in a form of national service, what they call national service. And the idea is you conscript these young people into the military and they get training and whatnot. Now, this is a very common thing. A lot of countries do this. And in the documents, it says they can do this for 18 months. Now, the reality is that people are conscripted into the military indefinitely. We've seen reports of people in the military for over 10 years. And more than that, they're not just getting training. They are usually working as cheap laborers in a variety of fields. They're doing construction, they're in civil service, they're doing all kinds of things. Whatever the state requires them to do or wants them to do, that's where they'll be working. Nevsun Resources has employed hundreds of these indentured servants, really, a class of workers which the UN, Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, have all called slave laborers.
This precedent-setting case in BC is, however, not the first in Canada. In Ontario, plaintiffs are suing Ontario-based Hudbay Minerals for repression in their mines in Guatemala, including murder, a shooting paralyzing, and the gang rapes of 11 women villagers. This case set a national precedent as it was the first time a Canadian mining company had been brought to court in this country for crimes committed overseas. Rachel Small from the Mining Injustice Solidarity Network speaks to us more about the history of this case.
So it's been 7 years at this point since Adolfo Ish was murdered and Herman Chubb was shot in El Estor, Guatemala. And that means it's been 7 years since their families and their communities have been waiting for justice. These were both people who were resisting Hudbay Minerals mining operations on their land in Guatemala. And Angelica Chuck, Adolfo Ish's wife, and Herman Chuck himself, who was severely injured when shot, as well as 11 women from a nearby town who were raped and violently evicted in 2007, are bringing three related lawsuits forward in Canadian courts, in fact, in Ontario courts, against Hudbay Minerals, where they're trying to hold the Canadian mining company, Hudbay Minerals, responsible for the actions that were taken and that weren't taken, essentially for violence that took place at their former Phoenix mining project in Guatemala.
The Hudbay and Nevsun cases are precedent-setting in Canada. Rachel explains their importance and the difficulty of having the Hudbay case heard in Guatemalan courts.
So these cases are a precedent setting because historically it has been very difficult to hold Canadian mining companies responsible in Canada for their actions overseas. Courts in the past have said it would be better if these cases were heard in the places where the mines are. However, what we know is that while there are certainly issues with the Canadian justice system, the Guatemalan justice system is incredibly corrupt. Those who are involved in it face enormous violence, and the thought that justice could occur there is misguided. It's certainly misguided at best, and is, I would say, a willful attempt to evade justice on the part of the companies who are insisting that these cases should happen in Guatemala. So at this point, this case is proceeding in Canadian courts, which is very exciting. And I think it's opening the door to communities all over the world who want to pursue justice, not just in a country that has a justice system that functions a bit better than where they are living, but also in the country where the real decisions about these mines are taking place.
The Hudbay civil lawsuit in Ontario is ongoing, and the Nevsun case has resumed after the Supreme Court ruling in British Columbia. There is also a third similar lawsuit against Tahoe Limited in Vancouver. However, it is likely that since these cases are all precedent-setting, there will be appeals by the mining companies and the possibility that it could end up in the Canadian Supreme Court. This is Omay Salma Rahimthullah reporting for Groundwire.
In October, the Ontario Civil Liberties Association presented its 2016 Civil Liberties Award to Dr. Bruce Allen Clark at a public event held in Ottawa. Gretchen King from CKUT Radio in Montreal brings Groundwire this report on the event that honored the Dr. Clark's groundbreaking legal work of researching and defending Indigenous land rights in Canada.
In every generation, more and more molestations and disturbances under federal and provincial law were heaped upon the native culture in an unrelenting, unconstitutional, genocidal ethnic cleansing. That was the simple plan from then until now. Now is the time to right that wrong.
You were just listening to Dr. Bruce Allen Clark speaking in Ottawa after receiving the 2016 Civil Liberties Award presented by the Ontario Civil Liberties Association. To begin the event, the OCLA explained why Dr. Clark deserves this award.
Dr. Clark is so remarkable and so worthy of our attention and our admiration because he's the person who took on great personal and professional risk to advance a legal argument that goes to the core of Canada's identity. And it's that Canada's violation of Aboriginal rights is unconstitutional, so that it breaks Canada's own constitution.
Chief Gary Metallic took to the stage to speak about the impact of Dr. Clark's work.
You know, we did a lot when you were in my community. We did a lot and we learned a lot. And for that, we'll always be grateful, eternally grateful. And when Bruce talks about question never being addressed or the question never being brought forward to the judges again in their courts because, you know, they made sure that they got rid of him. They disbarred him and they made sure that he wasn't coming back to ever pose that question again on the pure jurisdictional law that affirmed we were, as Indigenous people, nations, and that we were and we are the original title holders. But I can stand here before you tonight and you, Bruce, and I've always told you, as long as I'm alive, that message is going to spread. And that's what I've been doing over two decades. And it was not in vain, because I know a lot of young people who have read your books and were struck the same way as I was. Everything just opens up. It's as clear as day. So I'm going to ask Sherry. I want her to come up, because she has an eagle feather that she wants to present to Bruce. And for us, the eagle feather, or the eagle itself, now has always been a symbol that has been deeply respected by all Indigenous peoples throughout North America. And it is because of its strength and vision and tenacity to survive. Bruce, as a constitutional international lawyer, he was the only lawyer in Canada who dared cross the line the judicial drew, that if their fraudulent ways were uncovered, that lawyer exposing that fraud would pay dearly for doing so. That was Dr. Clark. They stripped him of his right to be a lawyer. But for our people, he is still our legal evil. Because he dared to soar where only eagles dare to soar. Thank you, Dr. I introduce to you my friend, my dear friend, Dr. Bruce Clark.
You were just listening to Chief Gary Metallic introducing Sherry Kondo, who presented Dr. Clark with an eagle feather for receiving the 2016 Civil Liberties Award from the OCLA. To view a multimedia report from the event honoring Dr. Clark's legal work defending Indigenous land rights in Canada, visit the OCLA's website at ocla.ca. That's www.ocla.ca. This is Gretchen King from CQUT Radio with audio files from Laith Marouf, reporting for Groundwire.
And now it's time for a community radio report regarding AMARC launching a community radio stations against impunity campaign. This comes from Gretchen King at CKUT.
Francesco, you're joining us as the Secretary General of AMARC. In fact, AMARC is one of the largest global networks for community broadcasters. Can you talk about this new initiative of AMARC called Community Radios Against Impunity? What does this mean for community broadcasters?
Well, 19% of attacks against journalists means that journalists, especially at the local level, are always in the forefront for, you know, freedom of expression and access to information, et cetera, et cetera. It means that out of this 96% of these local journalists, most of them are coming from remote areas, from community radio stations, where, of course, the level of protection for journalists is much lower than public service broadcasters or big commercial media. Attacks of against journalists are of different nature. There are groups, armed groups. There are situations of conflict or post-conflict, situations where governments themselves are, you know, attacking journalists and trying to stop, you know, the access to information of a free information.
Francesco, what are the ways in which Canadian-based community radio stations can contribute to this broadcast? There's a number of formats that are requested. You're calling for radio programs to be submitted. What's the process for that? How do people participate?
The radio formats can have different, you know, typology. There is not a single format that we are asking. It can be a roundtable discussion. It can be an interview or just a testimony. What we ask is a story of life, a story of the local context where people can have been submitted to violence, and we would like this to be witnessed through radio stations and through radio productions. There is the format, as I said, can be very, very different also because we are doing this at the international level, and therefore formats will, of course, will be very, very different. But on the other hand, for us, it is important to gather stories, to gather testimonies, to gather stories of life and try to highlight them. And also because impunity and attacks against journalists have no fears. So while in some regions we know that there are more, we also know that this is happening all around the world, intimidations against journalists, et cetera, et cetera. So if Canadian radio station would like to participate, we just ask them to highlight their point of view, to highlight the struggle that they can do in their local level, to highlight the stories that their journalists have suffered in Canada or in other countries. What we do is to be compact and to show people and our partners that this movement of community broadcasters is there, and there for a common struggle and for a common fight.
Thank you, Francesco, so much for joining us. If stations or listeners would like to find out more about community radios against impunity, check out AMARC's website online at www.amarc.org. That's www.amarc.org. We've been speaking with Francesco D'Azio, who is the Secretary General of AMARC. Thank you so much, Francesco.
Thank you. Thank you.
Just heard Upstream by Cheap High.
And that's it for this edition of Groundwire News, produced by Glenn S. at CIVL in Abbotsford, BC, on Stalo Nation traditional territories. Music this week was by Dallas and Cheap High, and headlines were written by Braden Alexander and Carly Forbes. We'd also like to thank Gretchen King, Ome Selma Rahimtula, CITR's Indigenous Collective, Raina McIver, and Glenn S. Tune in again to hear Groundwire on your local community radio station or download at groundwirenews.ca.